know why I got excited, guys?
Why?
I was going to say something inappropriate to start the show, but that's not.
I was excited for a completely different reason. It turns out that all this time, maybe even into like last season, I had HBO at home.
That's perfect. You what?
I've had HBO this whole time. Apparently, my roommate tells me, he's like, "We've always had HBO."
How did you not know you had HBO, Eric?
It's really my roommate and I don't talk. He takes care of the cable, and,
so he watches the cable.
I don't watch the cable. Game of Thrones and Mad Men are the only shows I watch. So that's why there was a disconnect. Okay. We're having fun renaming each other. This is kindergarten right now.
And Game of Thrones is a podcast that you're listening to. We will somehow slice around some kind of the drastic circumstances that we were just listening to, which probably has something to do with the fact that Eric now has HBO at his home. Can we like give Eric applause for having an HBO station at his house?
This involves more clapping, doesn't it?
I think
it's more pity, though, isn't it?
It's pity.
Pity, why?
That he those conversations for instant messaging.
Oh. Yeah, well, I just didn't know. It's not like they send you anything in the mail saying congratulations, you've paid extra, and now you have this awesome channel.
But you were never watching the television and just happened upon an HBO station. How long have you lived there?
They'll give you the channels in the channel guide, right? Won't they? And then you'll just go to click it, and it'll say premium channel. You have to add this, that.
What, your roommate was never watching like the Saturday night movie on HBO when you walked in one night.
No. What he watches is sports and then Mad Men, which is on AMC. So I knew that we had AMC, but who doesn't? So,
but you know, guys, you know what's on HBO?
What?
It's Game of Thrones.
It is.
Oh, way to really back in.
This episode, thanks, guys, Tonks got naked.
Oh, shit. Did that really happen?
Yeah.
That really actually happened. And I was a little surprised because she's kind of, I don't know, her character's kind of nasty. Right?
Oh, come on now. Nasty in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zach loved it.
I felt so bad because, Remus is a good guy. And I just couldn't help but look at her. I didn't want to look away. So, like, sorry if you're listening. My bad.
Remus so, Lupin, if you're listening to this podcast?
If you're listening.
Doubtful.
Okay.
Doubtful. You're probably feeling pretty odd because it's been a full moon for the past 2 days that's been popularized on the media. So
yes.
I hope
yes,
you get
super
to feeling
mood.
Better. I
hope super
you get to feeling better. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
But I knew that Terrence would be happy because when the episode started off, I saw that nudity had been added back in to the credits.
Following last week's hiatus.
Micah immediately opened up the Game of Thrones group text that Selena is not a part of.
Nope.
And for good
it's
reason.
Probably a good
for
thing
good
in
reason.
This case.
Yeah.
Right. No, it was good. I only got to watch it this morning because I was traveling and filming this weekend, and I was going to watch it last night at about 1 a.m., but I was just like, man, I'm not going to remember anything, so I watched it today. I just want to just bust right into this because when I was watching it, it was so – like the whole beginning with Theon and with Bran, I felt like it was so ridiculous and so fast that I seriously thought it was a dream sequence because we had – the raven getting mailed off really quickly, and I thought that maybe was a little bit of, you know, like, oh, I'm a raven and I'm in your dreams bullshit. And I don't know. I didn't think it was happening until the scene was actually over.
Ah.
Yeah. A problem I had last season was if I ever were to watch the episodes out of order, you kind of can't tell right away. You know, if I had seen last week's episode and this week's episode, I would have thought that I missed the whole episode about Torrhen Square falling. Because that's already just happened.
Right.
So knowing that they didn't show it, great. That's fine. But I would have expected to see that, but they just glossed over it. All of a sudden, Theon bursts in, Bran's asleep, he says, "Wake up, cousin, we're going to the zoo." It was just like, he's jumping up on the, jumping on his bed. He's pretty much like, get dressed. I just took Torrhen Square, like, you have
Eric
to declare me a lord.
Joke from the joke list.
But,
nicely done.
Theon seemed pretty, you know, nervous almost in that scene. It did seem weird when he was trying to talk to Bran, and he seemed very uncomfortable with what he was doing.
He was. He's feeling the pressure because he knows if Robb Stark gets wind of it, which now he has, I mean, all hell's going to break loose and Theon's, you know, as good as dead.
How did he take all that negativity from everybody? How do you guys think he took that? Like, because he got it from a lot of people. They were like, you know, you betrayed us. And he was just kind of like, well, you know, not really. I mean, he had to be forced to kill you know, to perform that killed Sir Roderick.
At the same time, I didn't think that he was, you know, that he felt bad enough about it. You know what I mean? Like, I just doing that. He is just the biggest coward of all time. And Eric, I was saying this on Twitter earlier. You have to, if you can still defend him after this, you have to do it, because for me, there's just nothing worse than Theon Greyjoy. I mean, he is just a pig, and it's just made worse by the fact that he so easily falls to the pressure. This is not even him going in and saying, yeah, I'm going to conquer this because I'm awesome. This is him just like, oh, well, I kind of want to, you know, be better than my sister and my father, blah, blah.
Wow,
you know?
She's a very convincing American.
Dang. But, you know, it's just pissing me off. So.
No, it's true. When the scene was going and he was like, Bran, listen, bro, I'm here. So, and Bran was like, ugh, what is it? Like, he seemed too casual. I felt like it was fake. And then he sits down on the bed and kind of like leans up. And if you guys that are listening to the show would care to go back and watch that opening scene, just look at the look he gives Bran. It's just like, oh, I didn't think it was real. And then he goes outside and everyone's yelling and everything's crazy. And I really agree with Selena, like completely agree that he is, I liked him for a while, for a long time in the books. I liked his loyalty to Rob, but it's just so shitty how quickly he succumbed to the pressure from his father and his stupid ass sister. And he's just, you can see it in his eyes when he was outside, but he's just way too eager to prove himself, and he's willing to do any dumb shit, and he just doesn't know what he's doing.
I've said it before. I think that Theon is officially the sea bitch.
Wow.
So there.
And I don't think he means any harm to come to any of the Starks directly, any of their particular immediate family members. That's why he didn't, you know, he didn't grab Bran by the hair and drag him downstairs or anything like that. So I don't think he means for any kind of direct harm to come from them, because, you know, they're his family, whether he wants to admit that or not.
Well, no, he just sacked their city.
Well, he sacked their city, but really, who was injured? The problem is, I think, too, Robert, that we didn't see Dorne Square. We didn't see that battle. So, okay, he offed Sir Roderick, but Sir Roderick made fun of his papa, you know, in front of everybody. He kind of was asking for it. Like, he had
Sir
to
Roderick,
do it.
Like, was the one who taught him how to use a sword. You know, that was the whole irony of it. He sort of, I mean, clearly Ned Stark was kind of like his surrogate father, but Sir Roderick was kind of like his surrogate uncle in a way, wasn't
exactly.
He?
They, they grew up with each other, training with him every single day alongside, you know, the Starks.
I don't know. I think it was generous of Theon to have taken Winterfell in this state. I mean, it probably would have involved the least bloodshed taking it now. You know, he doesn't kill Bran. He just goes in, is like, hey, I'm here. I'm taking the city. Just declare me leader and we'll be good. You know, there's never like this threatening moment there between them where, you know,
yeah,
unless
I'm not
remembering
correctly.
Can't you
see how weak he is, though? I mean,
yeah.
He's very weak. But so far, I think, of all the bad leaders, of all the poor leaders that we have, like Joffrey, you know, I think the least people have died under Theon so far. But
you have to remember that Robb sent Theon back to his father to try and strike some sort of an alliance. He turns his back completely and goes and sacks Robb's home. So how is there anything redemptive in that? There's even that moment right before he's about to, you know, send Sir Roderick down to the dungeons. You know, he has to have this other guy, and I don't know his name because he said it really briefly on the pier.
The first mate.
On Pike. Yeah, whoever this guy is, I don't know if he actually has a name or if he's just kind of his, you know, like you said, first mate.
Blackie,
but
yeah.
And this guy just reinforces, no, you can't. And Theon says, no, I'm going to send him down the dungeon. No, you can't. You know, like, he has no conviction. Like, if he was a leader, he would have said, no, I'm in charge here. I'm sending him down to the dungeons, and that's it.
Right.
Instead, he falls to the pressure, like he has with his father, like he has with his sister, and he ends up... And I thought it was... Because this is not the way Sir Roderick dies in the books. I thought it was really cool how they did this, because they were almost tying it back to the same way that Ned Stark was killed.
Yes.
And you get that moment where even Sir Roderick says to Bronn, you know, I'm going to visit your father. And
yeah, that was excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that. But then the other thing is that the people are egging Theon on to be the one to he who passes the sentence should swing the sword. And Sir Roderick says that himself. And that's wisdom direct from Ned Stark. And so I'm thinking, well, at the very worst, okay, so Theon has decreed that Sir Roderick dies, but they actually get him to follow, you know, essentially Ned Stark's own plan of action. They're still teaching him. Like, some of them are really, like, still sympathetic to him over this whole
time. Ned Stark would be so proud.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think they're still teaching Theon. They're still like, you know, if you're going to be this kind of a leader, be this kind of, you know, if you're going to be a leader, be this kind of a leader.
But that's true, but we're talking about Theon Greyjoy, and the reason no one's actually scared of him and people are just like laughing when he walks through places is because he's a total dipshit demanding respect from people when no one's going to respect you and you're just kind of bubbling around. Like, he had a place where he had respect, and then he went home. And then now he's getting laughed at by a bunch of, you know, saltwater rats. It's ridiculous. And
how haunting were those words, though, when Roderick says, "Now you're truly lost"?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Roderick's buff, man. That took a couple hacks to get his head off. And he didn't have to kick it.
He sucks at swords.
Yeah. It's because he's
really
weak.
Though? I mean, it's bone. I never expected a head to cut off by anything other than
Ned could do it in one
blow.
Shot.
Ned could have done
Ned
it.
Ned had that big ass sword, though. Ned
the skinny
took his
guy.
Sword from
and the
throne.
Really, really skinny Night's Watch guy.
Yeah, the malnourished Night's Watch guy.
Illidan did it in one shot.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, whose bones crumbled. Well, but yeah, Theon. I don't know. I was still. I think next. Hopefully, next episode we'll see his father and his sister's response, because he had. The letters that, you know, were sent, and he said, "And copy my sister. Send one to her." So he really is seeking their approval. I still don't hate him. Sorry, I still don't
hate him.
I just
love how you're still on Team Theon through all of this. I wonder if you're ever going to, like, if anything will ever make you turn at this point.
Well, I'm off Team Stannis. You know what that took, so.
That's true. Well, but Renly is already dead, so.
Well, you know who's not happy with Theon? Rob
is not happy.
That is true.
Rob,
So for those of us that haven't read the series, do you think Rob's about to kick some ass?
No.
No?
Okay. Whose ass?
Do you think, is Rob as weak, can't follow through as Jon Snow was in this episode? Do they have that stark weakness for love of something undefined?
I totally disagree with that, though, because Jon is a good man.
He is a good man. Yeah.
He's not going to take out that hot ass wildling. Hell no. What would you do with a situation like that?
Oh, I get it.
Look, his men gave him one task to do. Come on, really? One task. What? And no, she has zero redeeming qualities.
Let's be honest here, okay? You just don't think about how odd that happened. It was like he takes one look at her and you could just tell there was so much tension, and you could tell that he definitely was not going to kill her, but they just were like, he was like, "I've got this." They're like, "All right, cool. We'll meet you on top of the mountain."
Yeah, what was up with that? I never understood that. I think because
they just peaced out.
I don't get that.
I think they were giving him some privacy. Yeah. I think they were like, okay, we know you're new here out in the wild where there's no women. We're going to, you know, I think that was the situation.
Corin knew that he wasn't going to do anything, though.
I was going to say
did.
The same thing.
Yeah, he
I
did.
Think so that, he's setting him up to fail. Will they chastise him if he comes back with her alive?
No, I think that they were expecting. I think Corin is really setting Jon up to make his own decisions, you know, and whatever, for better or for worse. And
there's no place for him on the Night's Watch if he makes his own decisions. Like, what the hell is Corin trying to do to Jon?
Corrin's a badass.
I mean, they can technically, like, some of the Night's Watch people have, like, gone to the whorehouse and stuff. Yeah, quoting from the book.
Yeah.
They have done that before, so that's not to say if he, you know, did that, he would be out of the Night's Watch. But I don't know why I'm trying to be, like, so, you know, this is an HBO podcast, but you know what I mean. he would be out of the Night's Watch. He just can't marry anyone.
I mean, he can go to a whorehouse and screw any girl that he wants, but he just can't take one for his own.
Yes,
guys, he's
there
a virgin.
Yeah, he is a virgin as well.
Well, so when he couldn't kill her the first time, okay, fine, right? But then she ran, and she was really going to get away and go warn somebody and get, like, a whole army to kill them all. Like, that was a big deal. Once he caught her, he should have killed her then. But,
yeah, it's a bit weird he's just walking around with her now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, but then doesn't he need her to lead him back to the top of the mountain? Isn't he, like, using her to track his buddies? Is that the okay?
He's trying to fuck it.
He's a good guy.
He's trying to fuck it. What?
No. he's a good guy, and he's just, you know, he's always like said F you to authority, and he's always tried to do the right and noble thing.
Isn't there going
to
be a conflict, like a serious conflict, if the Knights can't get him to kill a wildling? Like, I said he's never killed a woman before, but isn't that a real big deal, a big issue if he can't kill the wildlings who are going to take him and eat his flesh?
I think that John is seeing past their quabbles among humans to humans. The series is clearly heading in the direction where we're going to be dealing with things that are a lot worse than I don't like you, you don't like me, but we're all humans. Like, Rob is seeing past that, and he's understanding that they all have a common enemy, which are the White Walkers and the Whites. So,
you mean John?
Yeah, sorry, John. I can't stop doing that. But he's clearly seeing past that, and he's like, okay, well, she's like, when they have their masks on and their hood and their stupid like clothes and their axes, they're savages and I want to kill them. But when she had no axe and she looked up at me, she was this pretty redheaded girl, and I see no reason I should just kill her because she's walking around, you know?
Yeah, and you know that those dark, curly-haired boys can't resist the redheaded girls.
Right. Well, I mean, she was... think about this. All right, first off, I have complete confidence in why they went to Iceland, because those sets were just breathtaking, just perfect for those shots. And, you know, he's walking around this desolate, sort of Nordic, crazy place, and then... You know, look what they find. It's like an oasis. It's like they found a whole bunch of, like, warm water, except it's a girl.
Yeah, she's kissed by fire, as the books say.
What about going back and something to Rob, was it? As soon as they found about what Theon did, they were like, I always told never trust a Greyjoy. Like, do you always say that? Or is that, like, something, like, off the Brady Bunch? Mom always said, don't play ball now, but she never says it.
Well, she says that to him, though, back in earlier in the season.
What reasons does she have not to trust Theon? Because wasn't he raised, like, as one of them, as everybody else keeps saying?
Yeah, but so was Jon Snow, and she also hated Jon Snow.
Yeah, we have to understand that in this world that Martin's written, it's less about actual exposure to people, because, like, chipping off and growing up in a different land and then coming back 15 years later is, like, a normal thing for them. So, like, experience and in friendship and that kind of growth, they definitely have always, and we've seen it in the series time and time again, they definitely always put that behind whatever sort of oath and allegiance they have.
Yeah, and a lot of loyalties as well are based on what side they took in the Targaryen versus Baratheon war. You know, the last war. And I think that they were probably on opposite sides,
I think that's part of it. And, you know, it gets brought up. I forget who says it, but I think Theon actually mentions it, you know, when he's talking to Sir Roderick about how Ned Stark was responsible for his brother's deaths and that, you know, he fought against Balin, and that's why Theon ended up becoming sort of this adopted child. Yeah, I think it's that Catelyn doesn't trust Balin, and she doesn't trust, you know, that family as a whole. Not that she doesn't necessarily trust Theon, but we see how quickly he's influenced.
Mm. He's just a shithead in this episode.
Yeah, he's a turncoat. He's horrible.
Yeah.
But what about Rob, though? Like, how did he not notice this female Frankenstein that's standing next to his mother?
Oh, stop hating on Brienne.
You guys are so mean.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, Rob was trying to get his name on a little bit with the sexy field nurse.
He totally got cock blocked by his mother as well.
Yeah, he really did.
That was in my notes. Seriously, that was in my notes. I only took like 3 notes the whole episode.
The Catelyn cock block.
I'm going to go ahead and read this line. Ready? Rob has got swag, period. Catelyn cock blocked, period. She definitely thinks they sleep together, period. Yeah. She walks up and Rob walks away like, oh shit, like, you know that moment, everyone here, their parents has like seen you talking to like a member of the opposite sex growing up, and you're like, oh shit, do they think I like them? And he walks back to his mom and he's like, hey, what's going on? She's like, oh, some shit, what's going on with you? He's like, yeah, that's cool. Hey, have you met her? She's good. And Catelyn looks up at Rob like, yeah, she looks pretty attractive. What's going on? Like, oh, I see what's going on here. I was your age once.
And we were, of course, as well introduced in the scene to the fact that Rob is promised to someone else.
He made a promise to Argus Filch that he would marry one of his daughters.
What did Mrs. Norris think about that?
Mrs. Norris had nothing to say. She pursed her lips.
But I thought something else that was important that came out of that scene, too, is when he was talking with Bolton and saying that, you know, he wanted to go himself and take back Winterfell. What kind of king am I if I can't even protect my own home court, essentially? Sorry, I'm in NBA playoff mode. So, and Bolton says, well, you know, we have the Lannisters on the run. We can't get away from focusing on our task at hand. I'm going to send a raven to my bastard son and let him go take back Winterfell.
Oh, sorry. I just think about drunk history when...
Drunk history. You are William, my bastard son. Go take...
You are my bastard son. Take a string. I'll link in the show notes.
Well, by the way, I mean, you don't get much backstory on Roose Bolton and his bastard son, who's Lord of the Dreadfort. I don't remember exactly what his title is, but he's kind of a sick individual.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's really funny how in this show they sort of... They're making the villains less evil, like except for Joffrey. Like all right. The people we're supposed to hate, we don't really hate them, which I think is weird because I don't know who to hate now.
Speak for yourself. I hate everybody in this show.
No, I what the hell were we just talking about? I got distracted by Eric. Yeah, I have nothing to say about that. Next.
Speaking of soft spots, what about Tywin Lannister? We finally get to talk about this a little bit more. Does he have this spot for little girls? Is that in the book?
Like, I don't think so.
Because, man, so. He was like, he didn't even realize when she stole that scroll.
Let me just say something here. I was scared shitless whenever Lord Baelish was in there with Arya.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, he's going to notice her. He's going to notice her. He's going to notice
her.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, I think he did.
Because... It wouldn't be to say in front of Ty, right? Like, oh, you're smart, you have Arya. But, I mean, I think he finally is able to track her down, considering what he promised Catelyn, too.
In the books, he doesn't know where she is, but at this point, that doesn't mean anything in the show. Right.
Yeah,
so I'm thinking he probably does know.
This whole situation, like you guys had said in the past couple of weeks, has not been in the books.
No.
So anything goes, really. I mean, Baelish could see Arya, and then, you know, that could get things back on track to where they need to be as far as the book goes. We just don't know.
It's just like fanfic. It's like,
I know, it really is. It's like an alternate reality.
But it's cool,
really,
though.
Bizarre.
Like, we've been saying it for weeks, but, you know, I really do love the books from what I've read so far, and I really do love George R. R. Martin's writing style, but these people that are working on the show are trained professionals, and they're kicking ass. Tywin, in this episode, and it really just is reflective of what he's had in the past few episodes, and I really, really like his character in this. Like, I've always liked Tywin Lannister. The second he was introduced in the show last season, it was such a good scene because you get to see just the pure, swift intelligence just pouring out of him. He's having sort of a heart-to-heart with Arya, and he's telling her his backstory, and you get another sort of reflection and sense of importance of how important the family structure is to him and how important his family name is. And I don't know, I just feel like out of most of the characters in the book and the series, as far as it's represented in the TV show, he's the most honest and pure one.
Yeah.
And see, here's the thing, like, for me... And I don't know, maybe, Micah, you have a different perspective, but this is what's difficult for me having read the books now, because I totally agree with you. I think Tywin in the show is fantastic, and he's kind of likable. You know, like, he's a bad guy who's really likable, and he's really intelligent, and he treats Arya nicely, and I really want to like him. On the other hand, then I have this perception of Tywin Lannister as he, quote-unquote, really is, which is what he is in the book, which is a total bastard. He is a horrible human being that we absolutely hate. And I think for something, no spoilers, but I think we're really supposed to hate him. And so for me watching the show, I'm not like, ooh, yay, I don't know what's happening next. This is exciting. I'm like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be feeling right now. And it's a bit too confusing for me.
Kind
you
of the way
I mean?
That Eric feels about Theon.
Yeah.
No, it's different. No, I think that's different. Because I think that a lot of us agree with what Selena's saying about Tywin, whereas I don't think any of us agree with what he's saying about Theon.
Yeah,
so,
there you go.
Sorry, Eric.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. So you have more friends. You're ganging up now.
Exactly. No, but I liked what you said, Zach. I liked what you pointed out. The fact that he's sitting there talking about how he taught Jaime to read, you could tell that there's some emotional tie to him that I don't really think you always get to see in the books. It was what Selena was mentioning earlier. Like, you could see how much he actually cares about his son, how much he really wants to get his son back.
He started a war for him.
Yeah.
He appreciates that she's a smart cookie. Like, smart people can just interact with each other easily, and they just talk because he's a good guy, she's a good girl, and they just rattle about shit. And I know that he's a bad guy in the books, and Selena, you were saying that I know that we're supposed to think he's a bad guy and all this shit, but
honestly, not in the show, clearly, because he's a good guy in the show.
in the show, there's literally no trace of him being a bad guy.
No.
Literally. Yeah.
But I think
not even once.
I think that's kind of, I don't want to say annoying, but I just feel like it's strange because, essentially we are following the books, but this particular thing, you know, what are we supposed to?
Right. In the conflict of Stark versus Lannister, Starks are the good guys, right? No question. Ooh. Right.
Yes.
In the books. So
well,
that means Lannisters are the bad guys. Plus you got Cersei
well,
and Joffrey
so much that they're
on
the bad guys. It's just that they're bad people.
Right.
I think more than, except for obviously, Tyrion.
In a lot of cases, they're greedy and dishonorable, yeah. And then you have the flip side. You have the Starks who live within their means and are
right, exactly.
Totally born on honor. So they sort of juxtapose each other, and I think it's a really interesting take what they've done with Tywin. I think it adds just more layers to the plot, like throwing Arya in the mix with him. And I think above all else, I'm not as focused on the fact that it separated from the books. Like that's not that huge of a deal to me. I'm more focused on. I'm excited because I'm interested. I want to know what direction they plan on going with it because I think it might be interesting.
But it's just like, imagine, okay, I'm not going to keep talking about this forever, I promise, but just imagine, say, that in, let's take Harry Potter because it's the common denominator. If they went, who can I compare him to? Say that they took...
Malfoy, Lucius Malfoy.
Lucius Malfoy. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. They took Lucius Malfoy, and in the books he's obviously... really creepy and really mean, and you know, some people like him, but he's ultimately a really, really rotten guy. And if they did what they've done to Tywin and decided that he's actually going to be really nice to Harry, and he's going to be like, Harry, I'm going to tell you about my father, and you know, you're really smart, and it just makes no sense.
Yeah, that's
because then you're just, more than anything, you're left with just the question of, okay, so what am I supposed to think about this guy now?
Right. But I think you get more character development out of Tywin.
Oh, definitely.
You get to see how alone he is. His wife is dead.
I love the change.
His father's dead. You know, mm-hmm. His son is captured. And, you know, look, the only one that he has any faith in right now is the son that he's never really shown much respect for his entire mm-hmm. life. And that's Tyrion.
You know, it just doesn't – it's going to fall through. She is not thinking this out. Like, if you're going to have a cover story –
Well, she's like
but,
a
I mean,
tiny
she's,
kid,
she's
though.
Smart in some right. aspects. In other aspects, she's like just asking to be caught and found out. Like, she's in the lion's den.
I think she's overperformed
nine.
For her age. I think she's definitely overperformed for her age.
She's in a tough situation, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, if she didn't have, that guy to save her, you know, to kill people for her, she would have been in deep shit.
The super assassin?
He
was super assassin. He's like channeling the Avengers or something.
That was my other bit of notes. Here's my notes on this scene. Ready? All right. In caps. I have sweet hiding spot because she's sprinting through the whatever you would call that place, the courtyard, and then she's running and then she just hides behind a wall.
Right. The guy goes halfway.
He goes to the wall and just looks straight like, shit, she's gone. Like, I just excellent
hiding
spot.
How smart is
he?
He can't read either.
It doesn't matter. And and then my other note right after that is also in caps and it just says, that was the shit, period. So, good assassination.
You see, like, a dart blower?
Yeah,
like,
the blow dart. Yeah,
it's from the jungle or something.
I think he has magic.
He still had Lannister red on it, which was daunting.
Mm. And Tywin's just like guard, Tywin. Guard, come on.
Guard,
clean up this
guard.
Other dead guy.
Yeah,
he doesn't seem too upset or too panicked. Really.
No, dude, he is so stressed out. You've got his kid. He's fighting a war that he necessarily didn't even really want to get into. And like, it's going south. He's got an incestual king at home. That's his family. Like, everything's falling apart for this guy. And I just, the way they've really set him up in the show is they've kind of made him totally not responsible for every bad thing another Lannister has done. Like, Jaime, Cersei. I forget what's his name. He's got a blonde
Joffrey?
Head. And he's dumb. Yeah, John.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or Joffrey.
Wow.
Joffrey. Sorry, I didn't take
he's
my multiple.
He's got a blonde hair and he's dumb. Okay.
Wow. Thanks.
Well,
yeah,
his hair might have a little brown in it, though, in this episode.
Yeah, that's true. It's weird because they've allowed Arya to like him because of, like, he shows, and he has since they first, like, started that scene. Or started her cup bearing with him. One of the first dialogues with him and his compadres in that room was he was saying, listen, we underestimated Robb Stark. He actually is a badass. So from like day one, she was like, this guy isn't so bad. Like, I'm confused. I don't know what they're... What do you mean you don't think so?
No, I don't think she's thinking like that. I think she's thinking with her head and saying, you know, remembering her courtesies and agreeing with them because she doesn't want to be killed and she doesn't want to be found out.
You got to watch this episode.
I think there's almost a mutual respect between the two of them.
Yeah, she definitely started a dialogue with him this week and they definitely were having a heart-to-heart. Like, she was stealing a piece of paper, but she was still having a conversation with him. She gave a shit.
Maybe I could agree if it was some kind of mutual respect if he knew who she was.
But isn't that part of it, though? The fact that she's so good at deceiving? I don't know. Like, I feel like, imagine her story if she was stuck at King's Landing.
She's so good at deceiving because she's 8 years old and she's a girl with her hair chopped off. And he really doesn't know, you know, who she is or what she looks like or... anything like that.
No, I'm
talking about Arya.
I don't think he knows who she is.
I think he knows.
Do you? If he knew, I think he'd have done something.
What I mean to say is, I don't think that he knows she is Arya Stark. I think that he knows she definitely is not a stonemason's daughter.
Now that you mention it, it's probably the same as, you know, when Robb said to that girl in the camp, he's like, I can tell you're a lady.
Yeah, exactly. Tywin Lannister has been at this kind of shit for a while. He's a smart cookie. He's like, okay, well, she lied about this. He's like, oh, stonemason is your dad. That's cool. I never heard of one that could read. You know, like, he was basically just questioning her. He was just like, okay.
Is it like an ant under a magnifying glass kind of thing? Or, like, the other thing is maybe he doesn't need to know who she is because right now he's lonely, like he wants the company. Is that what it is? Like,
no,
that makes him
really
seem like,
who she was,
you know, more human
like
than ever.
Earlier, he but, be trading her ass like right now for Jaime.
That's a tremendous tactical advantage. That's a tremendous advantage to have Robb Stark, your enemy's little sister.
I think you're right, Zach. I think that he probably doesn't know that she's Arya Stark, but it's very likely that he's waiting for her to reveal herself.
Well, why do you think that he's kept her so close and that he's been so kind and resourceful? Like, I think that if anything, that may be the reveal that happens. Like, it was a whole front. You know what I mean? Like, it was a whole front. I think that may be the only way they spin it, that there's going to be a moment where Tywin Lannister disappoints us and does something. Like, because you have to understand, they're doing this for a TV audience, and they're building this guy up for us to like him. And so maybe at the end of the season is when he's going to be like, F you guys, and he does some shit and, like, trades Arya out or does some stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I feel like they're definitely setting it up for a moment like that. I don't know how exactly, but it could be interesting.
I feel like he likes her, though, because she can match him almost wit for wit. Like, she always has a great response to give him that's so, you know, intellectual in nature that it matches him, and he's just kind of... He likes the challenge of having this conversation with her.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this week in the episode, he was like, well, how did your father die? And she said, well, he was loyal.
The thing about Charles Dance, okay, because I've seen him in pretty much one other thing, actually two other things. But the first thing I ever saw him in was a movie called The Last Action Hero. And you guys may remember
that.
You may remember this. Okay,
he played Cyrus, didn't he?
What
was the guy's name?
What's his name?
I don't know. It's not important. He
Benedict.
Was a
Benedict. Okay, guy with one eye.
Same thing. Same thing.
Yeah. Okay. But look, he was a villain in that film, and I recommend you guys all have to see this movie because it's kind of like Netflix. It's wish fulfillment. It's kind of like what all kids.
That's
want
another
to happen.
Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, isn't it?
Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger is in it, but
those
he plays
movies come up on the show all the time. Arnold needs to be cast
in the
Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Now. Watch it on Netflix now. You have to get out of here. They're trying to kill you.
He would have been a good
that would have been a tremendous like step down for Schwarzenegger from governor of California, his first role.
But the steroids probably wouldn't have helped him do Hodor's big scene.
This is not steroids. That's true. Austrian.
Speaking of death, let's talk about that riot that happened in old King's Landing.
Let's talk about how the Hound just ripped somebody's intestines out with his bare hands.
Or how that poor woman got her arm ripped off.
No, it wasn't the woman. It was the priest that was wishing myself off.
Oh, that's true.
I'm pretty sure.
I think you're right.
The crone didn't do him any justice.
I thought it was the woman because you see that those guys call that woman, and all of a sudden there's like an arm. It seemed to be well shaven. So
I don't know. It had a sleeve on it. I'm not sure. I don't know, guys. Tell us on Twitter.
Anyway,
or Facebook.
Someone got ripped off.
Someone got his arm
ripped off.
Did that whole scene not just start happening just so fast? They just walk through the door and look around, and everyone's like, hey.
It was really terrifying. Like passageways that don't involve walk through public. Because I'm saying, like, even when there's no riots going on, those walls were, you know, those narrow corridors were not very defendable. It's not strategically the most optimal place to be when a riot occurs.
That's true.
But it's probably the only way.
I mean, it's not like they have a train going from you know, wherever they were.
Like a Zeppelin just picks them up.
I don't remember the layout of King's Landing from the books. I don't know if you do at all, Selena, but I feel like there have been those moments where they're describing these scenes where this royal family has to kind of go through the common folk to get to where they need to go. So
yes, yeah, I mean that's definitely the way that King's Landing is that the town is basically on one side. It's the harbor, then the town, and the castle is kind of removed up a little bit, and then the other side there's like a backside of where it goes into the, I think just the sea. But so to get to the harbor, they basically have to go through the town, and I think they also do it because they want to show, you know, they want to let the people see them, kind of thing. You know, this is a royal procession, and they're sending off the princess. They expect the whole town to come and wave goodbye.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you guys? How do you think the guy feels? The kid who was like jeering at his friend and dared him to throw a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. He's probably dead now.
How do you think he feels? No, he was up top. He was up top, right? Didn't they throw it from up top?
Oh, right. Well, he probably feels like shit. But I'm bummed.
You know, that's a shitty thing to do. That really shitty.
Sorry,
thing
it's
to do,
late.
Guys.
It's all I got.
Let's just get all jokes out. You know,
they're really funny. We just got all these shit quips.
Yeah,
yeah. That's good. He hit Joffrey with that. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, you were. I just thought that whole riot just started like decompressing so quickly, and that's pretty much how it happened. Like mob psychology took over, and they were just like, when that happened, when whatever person fell, it was exactly like two scenes from two zombie movies put together. It was exactly like Shaun of the Dead, and it was exactly like the original Resident Evil film when he gets pulled into the elevator, and then the other guy gets pulled out of the window. Mixed them together. It was crazy.
And stuff like that just makes me lose faith in humanity. I mean, that was disgusting.
I think obviously it was cool TV. Because it painted the picture of how primal people can get when they just don't, like, when they're at their wit's end. And I mean, we often forget that we are animals. We are beasts, too. Like, we still operate off of our lower brain just the same as all these other animals. You know, we haven't evolved past that. We've been here for 100,000 years. So, like, we're still using fight or flight, so when shit goes down, we're just going to rip arms off.
We're just going to
rip an arm off if we tried to.
Arms,
you know?
Pretty easy.
Oh, yeah. But, I'm fighting the urge
but
all
how
time.
About Tyrion, you know, talking about instincts, you know, he knew something was going to happen. He's purposefully sent Tommen back.
Well, he saw it. He was like, oh, this doesn't look good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Why didn't they
and
just go that way?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, well, I think maybe if they all went, they would follow them, but I think Tyrion recognizes that out of all of them, Tommen is the one that most deserves saving.
Yeah,
well, he's a child. Yeah,
Tyrion literally didn't give a shit about Joffrey, and somebody else, you know, really did. So
no, the only people that Tyrion cared about were Tommen and Sansa,
right?
Because they were innocent.
When they finally got into whatever sort of antechamber that separated them from all the crazy people outside, and Tyrion and Joffrey started to have their dialogue, I felt like that was a really great moment because we've sort of built up to where Tyrion just was like, you know what? I'm just going to give you some shit. I'm just going to tell you how much you're sucking, you know? It was nice to finally hear him tell him how bad of a king he was.
He's just like,
and we got another imp
whenever
slap.
I feel like hitting you, I'm just going to hit you from now on, okay?
That poor kid has gotten hit more times on this show.
I know.
Yeah, he's like, go get Sansa. And then he's like, I only listen to the king. And the king's like, no, just leave her.
Right.
And I don't know. That to me... And I mean, you guys, you know, we brought up just now the scene of the birthday present scene where the girls are slapping each other with stuff. That just doesn't hold a candle to how brutally fucked up this attempted rape scene was. I mean, this, like, that's the kind of shit that bothers me. I just like, whatever, like this, I mean, I don't care because I'm an adult and I understand that it's totally fake and it's television. You know, I shoot stuff and I know how much people laugh between awkward shit like this. It was intense. They cut that so well. The whole sequence and the music and the acting was great.
Yeah, it was terrifying. Yeah,
it was terrifying to us that haven't read the books. And I'm asking the people that are listening to the podcast as well. So that I'm just really me, Terrence, and Eric, and the podcast listeners. D- did you guys think that she was actually going to get raped and that would be part of the story? Because I kind of did for a moment there. I didn't think she was going to get saved.
Yeah, there was a moment where I thought that that would happen, but I also didn't think that they would take it that far on TV. You know, I didn't think that they would take it as far as her getting raped, because we see that she's, you know, as you said, Zach, she's just this little girl still at the end of the day. And I don't think that they're going to be showing that kind of...
Right, well, don't let that fuel your decision, I guess, then. Or maybe it does. But for me, objectively, watching it, I mean, there are tons of different kinds of scenes like this in different films and television shows. So all that aside, I thought that that was kind of a weird plot twist that they were going to go in a direction.
Man, it's like HBO.
Like, now it's just totally crumbling. Like, she's a battered girl now. Everyone hates Joffrey. People are dying. Like, we're about to see a war almost in itself inside of King's Landing before those people even get there.
But it was important, I think, for the Hound to be the one to rescue her, because we've seen this growing relationship between the two of them ever since last season when Sansa has that moment where she's thinking of pushing Joffrey off the that bridge or whatever it was when he was showing her father's head. And he also called her Little Bird, which is something that he refers to her a lot in the second book.
Meaning like she's innocent? What do we think that means?
It means that she sings to basically someone else's tune. Like, it means that she's just really, really good at repeating whatever songs they want her to sing. You know, like a caged songbird?
No, I feel like the show is playing down their relationship for a reason, and I'm not sure why yet, because it's more developed in the books. I feel like in the show, like, Selena, you just referenced that scene, but I don't think that many people that, and like I said, like, let me know, guys, but I don't think that many people that aren't familiar with the books and that don't have friends that are filling them in with information from the books, I don't believe...
Don't
that
listen
many,
to this podcast.
Right. I don't believe that many of those people would gather a connection between the Hound and Sansa. Moreover, they would gather that the Hound is just a good guy deep down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's just another thing where at this point we just sort of have to go, okay, well, maybe they're not going to have a connection in the show. It would just be a shame, because it is, again, one of the great things about the books that's the thing, is that when there's something really great in the book, you want to see it on the screen, and then it doesn't happen. You're like, oh.
It's a trade-off, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of trade-off, there was an attempted trade-off. And when I say attempted trade-off, I mean there were attempted trade-offs, plural. Time and time and again, you know, we go further into the episode, and, you know, just no one wanted to give Daenerys a boat. That's all she wanted was a few boats.
All she wants is a boat.
But she didn't make a very good case for herself, did she?
She really didn't. They're like, you and what army? And she's
when did I tweet you? I tweeted you earlier today trolling the hell out of Selena. How do you feel about Daenerys this episode?
God, yeah, it was. It's very, very hard to be on Team Daenerys at the moment, I think, because she is just acting like a spoiled brat. I'm sorry.
I agree.
I told the Daenerys fans.
I agree.
I told you.
But she's not in the book, though.
I know. Well, look at Tywin. He's a total teddy bear now, too.
He's got all the cool
Tywin
things.
Tywin the teddy bear.
Tywin the teddy bear.
Well, that's the name of this week's episode.
No, I agree with Zach, and it ties back to what you were saying the last episode. And yeah, we were talking a little bit about this before, and it's just the whole "I'm Daenerys Stormborn." It doesn't get you anywhere. Like, shut up! It's not a good argument anymore.
Nobody cares,
and she hasn't taken out her dragons yet, which doesn't make any sense. Yeah, someone has.
Somebody decided they wanted to go for a walk. So
it's her only card. It's the only thing she has, and she's just been hiding them away in the tower, going, "Oh, and then I walked into the fire, and I had these eggs." But it's like, where are they?
Well, you know what's funny is she hid them away in a tower. Now somebody took them and taken them to a different tower. I believe
different tower.
Dragons love towers.
What is that tower?
Right, exactly.
When I saw this, when I watched this, and I felt like this was coming for a while. I mean, even from way into last season. And it's kind of comforting because I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good with words. I can speak well. But I couldn't even get close to how well the spice trader just told Daenerys within like three or four sentences why she doesn't have this claim. Like, I was trying to say it last week, and I was trying to explain, and I was, you know, Selena and I were having that dialogue about whether or not she's like honorable, or if she's doing anything worthwhile, or if she's just being spoiled.
It was awesome.
But he said, he said it so much better. He's like that one line where he says, if you did not sit on it yourself, then you could not retake the Iron Throne. He was like, when did you leave Westeros? She's like, oh, when I was a baby. And he's like, yeah. Okay, like no one's going to know you when you go there. No one's going to care.
But if that is the case, then the only person who has a legitimate claim to the throne right now is Joffrey.
Cuz he sat the Iron Throne.
But that's I don't think that's well, yeah. I don't think that's the issue though. I think we are in a landscape where it is understood that people should retake the throne because some shit's going down. All right. I'm saying is that and all he was saying was even if you do have a rightful claim, A, no one's going to care, and B, it is not my problem. I'm not going to give you half of my wealth so you can go do shit. I don't even know you. I met you literally 3 days ago.
Yeah. You know what?
And I think that's the another like thing that we're sort of missing in the show, is that the point of Daenerys is that she is the mother of dragons. Like, that's the whole reason she is special. It's not because she's Targaryen. It's not because she's going to retake what is mine. You know, it's because she is like this in some ways prophesized return of the great Targaryen line, and she's not crazy, and she has the dragons. It's the return of the dragons that's the big thing about her, and she's just hiding them away.
Well, the spice traders still called her a bad
enough. That's why I'm on her side, is because she has dragons. I mean, come on, whenever they grow, whenever they get bigger, whenever they grow and whenever they get bigger.
That's the thing, too. I mean, if she had three full-grown dragons, she probably would have been able to get a couple ships. Let's be realistic.
She would need ships. Yeah. She would need the ships.
Yeah, I mean, she could just hang out and just watch them do stuff.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that I think we're getting to a point now with her where you're seeing her in this foreign land and she travels more and more. They don't care as much about what's going on back in the Seven Kingdoms. You know, they live in a completely different world, so to speak. And what happens over there doesn't necessarily impact what's happening, you know, aside from trade and other things like that, in the world in which we live in, like in this case in Qarth. So why should the Spice King give a rat's ass about Daenerys and her claim, quote unquote, to the Iron Throne?
What I'm gathering from this is not that just people of Qarth, and not that just smart people like the spice trader are telling her, sorry.
I think you're going to say Spice Girls every single time you say spice. Well, I'm sorry.
Well, it's like you're reading my mind. It's all I can think about. But I feel like it's the writers, like I said, I feel like they saw it like I did from the book, and that's the way they've written her character, and they're using her as a device to tell a very overarching theme that goes across the books and the TV show, which is all of these people are so self-centered and worrying about why they should be here, how they're doing this, and no one is really thinking about the ominous threat that this long winter is coming, and that now the dragons are coming. It's just like, there are things that are much bigger than their small squabbles happening. And I don't care if you are the mother of dragons, because I just don't give a shit about dragons. Like, I work on the dock and I go home to my family and blah, blah, blah. Like, people, it's not important, but everyone is, all they care about is their own plight that they have happening. And we had to see all of these starving people in this city that have been ignored by a young king, because all he is worried about is winning this war and making people that are mean to him and say bad things about him pay. It's not about the humanity, which is I feel like when we get later into the series, we're going to see everyone pay the price for that, because humanity will be, you know, in trouble.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, my question here is, you know, after all of the Khalasar, or what's left of them, gets pretty much slaughtered. Where the hell was Sir Jorah throughout all this?
Trying to get some ships.
They killed all the blood of her blood.
I felt so bad.
Their blood is everywhere.
I was like, oh, man.
Well, he's premier.
Where was Sir Jorah?
Getting some ships.
That really pisses me off.
He's getting some ships. She challenged him last week on last week's episode. So he's like,
probably just sad somewhere.
He's trying to prove his love to her.
But no, I was going to say, okay, this is one of I feel like I'm just the person on the show that brings these things up now, but this was one of two major things in this episode that were wildly different from the books, like wildly. So you can't possibly ignore them and be like, oh yeah, it's cooler. Because in, like, first of all, like, her Khalasar doesn't die. Like, her whole, it seems like all her people except Jorah and her blood rider and possibly the girl, the Westeros girl.
Who teaches her how to.
Because she wasn't dead. Yeah,
are you that talking about the hot one or the annoying one?
The hot one.
The hot one. The annoying one died, I think. But it seems like, except for them, like, they're all dead.
I swear to God. In that scene when she walks in there and you see her dead on the floor, I thought they were going to walk up to her and, like, say, like, who did this? And I swear, I thought she was going to be like, it is known.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, yeah, I felt like it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But then, and then they take Daenerys' dragons into the tower, and that, no.
Did that happen?
No one takes her dragons. No, it doesn't happen.
That's what I thought. I was watching, I'm like, where
and
did this
they co- can't take
who is,
her
who did
dragons.
It? Captain
it makes
Creepy
no
Face?
Sense. Yeah, maybe Jorah did it. But it's just so stupid because they would not be able to get her dragons. If they could just take her dragons from her, that makes her completely redundant.
Well, guys, I mean, I think it's safe to say this season they're really steering away from the book and
I know,
things
but,
are going.
But this yeah, makes but no cool. sense.
It's cool, though.
And, it'll tie in. It'll
where
tie
are they
in.
Going?
Did you like hear it. How like the dragons, they sounded like babies crying at the end?
Yeah.
It was a really cool, really eerie noise, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're trying to nap. That's what I. That's exactly what happens when I get woken up.
Now is that
so? Who was taking them?
Captain Creepyface. That's my money's on.
Jorah.
Yeah. Right. That's what came to my mind.
I feel like this was the lamest cliffhanger ending out of the whole out of all the episodes we've had so far. I was just kind of like, okay, our dragons are gone.
Yeah, but I wanted to see more. I just wanted to see more. More. Whoa.
Are you
know.
Talking about Theon and Little Miss?
That's what I was going to say.
Right?
Well, you know, I mean.
It was a very distinguishable grunt.
Yeah, I mentioned this I mentioned this to you earlier, Zach. Theon, he does well for himself.
Yeah, you did mention that to me. We had a good conversation. No, I just to touch on that really quick. I was really disappointed that it went so quickly from the dock and wherever they were in the Iron Islands, and then already to sacking Winterfell, because yeah. I really did want to see the sea bitch, like the ship. I just thought that would have been a funny thing. Like and then we never got to see it. So if you're listening to the show, people who make the show, listening to this show, people who make that show, let the sea bitch go to where the rest of the dead people are. They can, that's their vessel to get to the island.
Will we see the sea bitch in the Battle of Blackwater Bay?
I don't know. Micah?
No.
Okay. Wait, hold on. From this point on, and I need Eric and I need Terrence on my side on this one, Micah and Selena, they have very little clout because
it's
God,
true.
Damn
anything
it, the whole
happen.
Series is different now.
Yeah, you're right.
I agree.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, definitely.
It's making
me
very uncertain.
Now, Eric, you're really the only one that has, like, you're the one who's legit now because you have an opinion that's neither in support. You disregard what happens in the books and in the show. You like Theon Greyjoy. Yeah. So you're kind of like the surviving person that has no, like, inner battles with these characters. How's it feel?
It feels pure.
Well, we know who's not pure. It's Asha.
Oh, Asha. Okay, but, like, you know, there's this big thrust on her, not on Wildlings not having an allegiance.
Big thrust on her. Big thrust on her.
It is thrusted that Wildlings cannot be trusted. But, okay, so she does have an allegiance. Now, like, would that not... I guess what that means, okay, either she's on the side of Bran, right, and the Starks, and she cares about Winterfell, because she obviously aided in their escape. Or, despite Theon taking Winterfell, she still believes the real advantage is to assisting Bran and the Starks and Winterfell. So, which one of those is it?
Right, well, I'm not going to give you an answer, because we clearly don't know.
Because I'm sure that she doesn't
but
just
I think
drop
I do
her
know.
Drawers for everybody, right?
Listen, all right, listen, let's give her a little bit of room here. I think she is not the first girl to spread her legs for someone on this show to get a little bit of advancement, right?
That is true.
I mean, she just wanted a distraction, right? And
But why?
The way she killed that guard,
Theon,
dude.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he fell right for it.
Terrence, are you jealous?
He fell right for it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm jealous. Okay, that's the first thing. I'm jealous. Okay.
Well, dude,
listen.
Just
get it out.
I'm sure that Theon would oblige if he had enough to drink. I'm sure.
Number two, Theon has been Theon has said what every Harry Potter fan has wanted to these past, what, 7-8 years is,
here comes.
I wonder what's under those
robes. I always wonder what you had under there.
The thing is, like, okay, so she may be on the Bran side, right? She aids in his escape by creating a diversion.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sleeping Theon Greyjoy next to her, and she doesn't kill him with whatever it is she killed the guard with a couple seconds later. Okay?
Right.
She doesn't kill Theon. She has the opportunity to really set things right in Winterfell, to be perfectly honest. Because Theon's dead, okay, his men are going to go home. Like, hang the first
one. That is true, but I think
that
maybe,
is a good point.
Maybe she is sort of out for herself a little bit too, like, just in case something fails with the Bran plan, like, she wants to make sure she doesn't get
Bran
killed. The Bran plan.
Listen, I know that it's a little outlandish, guys, but I think that there may be some people left in Westeros that even have a shred of morality, and she just didn't want to kill somebody, because what's the point?
Dude.
That's true. It could be true.
If Bran...
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I just got to... I get it.
And it's the same reason that she decided to help these people that she grew close with over the past few months while all these wars have been going
on.
Yeah,
but what if... Is it like Helsinki syndrome? Is it like, you know, she feels like she owes them something?
Isn't that Stockholm syndrome?
Is it?
Helsinki
syndrome. Yes, please. They mentioned both, I think.
They say Stockholm, you hear Helsinki.
Look, can you point him out on a map? I didn't think so.
I can.
I can point out Helsinki.
Can, right?
And I know that she can.
No, I just think she's strategic, though, too. I mean, look at how Theon is able to figure her out right at the very beginning of the episode, because he thinks that by giving her a sword, she's going to put it right through his neck. You know, and then with why not kill him, what if it goes wrong? You know, what if she tries to kill him and she ends up getting killed herself, or a guard comes in after she kills him and finds the body and they can't get out in time? You know, there's a million and one things that could go wrong, whereas she just slips out of bed. You know, she's trying to, somebody said just before, create a diversion so that Bran and Rickon and Hodor and everybody else can kind of get away when there's still that opportunity. There's one thing, Selena, that you put in here that is kind of interesting, because I wonder what they're going to do and if they're going to incorporate these characters into next season somewhere.
And we'll never know.
No?
And we will never know.
Well.
Yeah, so they're obviously in A Clash of Kings, but they're not in the TV show. I don't know.
This is the other big difference in this episode, was that, they see... I mean, Jojen and Meera Reed, they're basically two children who are part of, like, this, this community of swamp dwellers who eat frogs.
Oh.
and they befriend, basically, Bronn. And during the long siege of Winterfell, which, you know, they skipped, and... And basically what happens is that when they do this whole big escape thing with Asha, they also bring Meera and Rickon, and Jojen. And the reason that this matters is because of something that we cannot spoil, and we cannot even give hints, because we do not want to be spoiling on the show. But it's very significant for the future that these two characters are in the show, and unless they're planning to completely replace them with Asha, but even that wouldn't make sense, because it matters who they are and what they can do. So, I mean, there are some theories that they're gonna bring them in season three, because there's still time for them to join this season, but there've been no casting announcement. There hasn't been anything, but I would think that out of all the changes they made, cutting the Reeds would make the least sense.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I don't know what you think, Micah.
Yeah, no, I agree, because they're crucial to the plot for certain characters that
books.
We've already mentioned moving forward.
You guys want to talk about the preview?
Sir Jorah was like, "I'm so sorry, my lady." And then that was it.
Yeah.
It was like, that was all I remember. I was just like, "Man, you're on my shit list."
And Daenerys was like, "Give me my dragons!
Give me my dragons,
like,
go find
again.
Them." And he's like, "Yeah, well."
She's like a petulant child. I'm so over Daenerys.
Oh, God, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And with that, I think we should start talking about our owns of the week.
How do we get back to Daenerys?
I don't know. Those things happened. Obviously, you guys know by now, if you have been listening to the show, But a little thing we like to do on this here podcast, Game of Thrones, is find the thing that happened in this latest episode that we're discussing that to our very substandard opinions, in some cases, me, like last week, owned the most. And we did a little bit of a Q&A, gathering some stuff from you guys on Twitter and Facebook today, which we will read off some of them after we do our owns for this week.
I'm actually, I mean, there's so many that you could pick from this week, and I always think Tyrion's the easiest one to go to, but I'm going to actually go to Bran when he says to Theon, did you hate us the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
Mm. My own of the week was the city of King's Landing owning Joffrey and, you know, the arm people.
Well, my own is Tywin opened up to Arya, told her about his dad. He, like, made a choice about that whole thing, that decision to open up. And I think he's lonely. I don't know. But it was an own because it was absolutely awesome to learn who he is as a person.
Yeah, I'm just going to pick from the easy one this week, and Tyrion. And we've had vicious kings, and we've had idiot kings, but I don't think we've ever had a vicious idiot king.
Yeah.
Wow, that was very spirited.
Yeah.
I liked it. Let me think. Okay. There were, Micah, you're so right. There are so many good owns in this episode. So many good ones. It's hard to, like, land on one. But yeah. Are we still, like, do we still like funny owns? Is that still a thing? Or are we going, okay, okay.
We need to lighten it up a little bit.
All right, well, okay. I'm just going to, can I read off a few preliminary ones to really just work up to my favorite one?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, first off, I think that this would easily be the funniest, but I'm not going to go the easy route. But let's just say that Catelyn cockblocking Rob was pretty own-worthy. Mm-hmm. She just walked up, and that could be funny if you say it right. I think that when the spice trader was like, good day, and just walks up the stairs away from Daenerys, like, totally shows his back to her. Like, he literally did that. I thought that was like, oh, shit, that's crazy. And then, you know, Tywin, when he was like, my cupbearer can read better than you.
Yeah, that was a good
that
one.
That was pretty awesome. But I think my favorite would have to come from Corin Halfhand. Around just the beginning of the episode, I was, you know, you're watching the TV show, you're not expecting that you're just like, you know, something like this is going to happen. Right? This is right to the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're in falling action after what Theon's just done to Chops. And so we're sitting, and I'm just watching the TV, and Corin Halfhand says to his bros in the Night's Watch, he's like, we've got to find these goat fuckers before nightfall. I just thought that was the funniest thing. That was just the best shit. Well, I'm surprised that none of you guys tweeted or Facebooked that line to us.
I don't even remember that line. I must have missed it.
There's that one. There's that one by Tyrion. Just made me cry. I was laughing so hard. He goes, and now I've struck a king. Has my hand fallen from my fist?
Yeah.
Oh, I was crying whenever I heard that.
Last night on Twitter and today on Facebook, we said, hey guys, listen to the show. Why don't you get in on the own action with us? Because, you know, this roundtable is only better if it's bigger and includes you guys that listen to the show. So we asked you guys what you thought your favorite owns were. And we got kind of a nice little selection back, kind of a mosaic of human beings, wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we really
did. Okay, so Larry the Wombat says, for his own of the week, Sir Roderick's neck totally owned Theon.
Oh, God.
That's true. That's a good one.
There was one by Toko Masho, and they said, I'm just trying to get comfortable, was pretty good. And that was with the reference with Ygritte and Jon Snow.
Yeah, that was a good one. She owned him.
Yeah, she
completely
really
owned him. Okay, well, I've got one from Amanda Kelly, who wrote that, when Tyrion slaps Joffrey again like a boss. Other than that, I'm still waiting for You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. And so am I. Unless they change it. You never know.
I have to give an honorable mention to the left lane who says, Tyrion's little imp slap on Joffrey is a given, but with the hound ripping a man's guts out with his hands is a major own. It gets an honorable mention because you capitalized own and it looks cool. So there's that. I think I'm going to have to go with, I don't know how to say this, and don't hate me because I don't know how to say this, but I think it's Makiel, and you definitely don't look like a Makiel. You could be a Makiel. Again, I don't even know what that is, but you said, well, Tyrion slapping Joffrey was great, but I also like Ygritte's wiggle. She was totally owning Jon, and I would have to agree. Dude, her hips weren't lying that whole time. No. It was perfect.
Actually, Miss Ryder says something very similar. Best own Ygritte toying with John's weakness, his virginity.
We didn't talk about that hip shake in the
wiggle
earlier in the episode. What did you guys think? Fairly quickly, though, was that not the most hilarious like bit of humor they injected into the show?
Yeah.
He's just like, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. Don't do that.
I think it was so funny because he's so stoic. Like, he just has no humor. And then she comes along and she's like, oh, yeah. And he's like, he doesn't know what to do with it. It's so funny.
She's like, she's like, hey, I'm attractive. You're clearly attractive. Look at that hair. Like, she's like, it gets cold at night.
Okay, guys. Well, that does wrap up this week's show. And we have a bit of contact information for you if you want to get a hold of any of us here at Game of Owns. We got the Twitter, twitter.com/Game of Owns. Be sure to follow us there. Also, Facebook. Been getting a lot of activity on Facebook and a lot of participation.
Super cool.
Really. So definitely keep that up. And that's, yeah. We got an email address as well, contact@gameofowns.com. Also, check out our website, gameofowns.com. Also, I just wanted to plug our iTunes real quick. You guys have done an amazing job of keeping
the reviews.
Keeping us up there. Yeah. We are, definitely. And I've been wanting to plug it for a couple of weeks now. Just, you know, we get so carried away with the show. But definitely thank you. Thank you so much for all your support and subscribing to the show and keeping us in the new and notable section. We are extremely grateful for that. And tell all your friends. Tell all your friends. Tell everybody. You know, while we were sitting here recording the episode, I texted a couple of friends, said, hey, listen to this podcast called Game of Owns. It's a Game of Thrones podcast. And there you go, a couple new listeners right there. But
I think it's pretty safe to say that we're all kind of like blown away. I'm pretty blown away by the just the sheer mass of people that have jumped onto the show. Like, it's it's awesome. I'm really glad that, you know, you guys are enjoying it so much.
Keep sending your owns after every episode. You know, send us what your owns are, even if we don't ask. Just be like, this is my own of the week. And we'll say it on the show.
And you can also leave your comments on hyperbole.com where I can actually read them.
Yeah. I was looking at those comments today, Selena. That's perfect. Yeah. And yes, Selena will answer you back on those comments.
I will do. That's the only place I see.
Well, kids and not kids and people that are friends with kids and people that have kids, people that don't know what that
people
means
that were kids
they don't
once
speak English, people that were kids once, all of the above. Again, to reiterate, thank you so much for listening. Game of Owns is a podcast about Game of Thrones that you probably listen to because you're a fan of the show. But you know, when the show is over and the show's riding this little flame of season finale-ness, I guess we can go ahead and just tell them now because we haven't addressed it yet.
Yes.
But the show that you're listening to right now will still go on, so you can all just divert all of your attention and all the love that you have for that brilliant television show for its podcast, which is us.
So many interesting things happen in the day. There's one thing I've learned from Harry Potter and going through that book series, for instance. The most interesting things actually happen in the downtime, in between seasons, in between books, in between films. You know, that's when the most interesting stuff happens. There are rereads, there are rewatches. People are reading for the first time.
Yeah.
You get this influx of people wanting to talk about it, wanting to look at it, and news about the next season starts kicking up.
Oh,
you
definitely.
Know? So, totally excited for the downtime here.
I have one here from at Captain Creepy Face. When I stole the dragons.
Did somebody actually change their Twitter name to Captain Creepy Face?
Wait. Is a real human going to change their name to that Twitter thing? Right? Are you going to do that, Terrence?
Is it available?
I am going to do the one Micah read.
Well,
isn't the one that you read?
That's
no,
how
Terrence,
this
you better
week's
not
episode
change that
of Game
Twitter
of Owns in, everybody. Please wish Terrence luck in his changing of his Twitter thing and stuff like that. I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Micah Tanabe.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I am almost Captain Creepy Face, but right now I'm T-Bitch.
Guess that makes me Sir Lena then.
But wait, hang on.
Goodbye, everybody.